Once again, we'd like to turn to Romans chapter 12. This morning we looked at verses 1 and 2. We'd like to read verses 1 through 3. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. Be not conformed to this world, but, or rather, be ye transformed. How this is done is by the renewing of your mind, the purpose that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. For I say, through the grace given unto me, to every man that is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly, according as God hath dealt to every man the measure of faith. Again, in verses 1 and 2, Paul is pleading with the saints of God. He says, I beseech you. We see the grounds of his plea are the mercies of God. I beseech you, therefore, by the mercies of God. And the mercies of God have reference to what Paul had written about the first 11 chapters, basically salvation by grace without the deeds of the law. And he's pleading with them to do something, to present their bodies. So he's pleading with them concerning a duty and an obligation. And the thing that should compel them to this duty is God has been merciful to them in saving their soul. You come down to verse 3. And the first word is the word for. That is with respect to. It's referring back to something. It's referring back to the duty and the obligation that is stated in verses 1 and 2. So he says, for I say through, that is by the means or agency of, the grace given or bestowed unto me, to every man that is among you, that is all the saints of God that were assembled. The duty and obligation here is for all. It's for all the saints. And what he is about to say is for all the saints. He then proceeds to warn against that which will surely prevent one from carrying out the duty and the obligation of verses 1 and 2. He says not to think of himself more highly than he ought. So it is sinful pride and wrong thinking that prevents one from this duty and obligation that is being stated in verses 1 and 2. He then goes on to say what is vitally necessary in fulfilling this duty and obligation to God. But to think soberly. That is, our thought process is not to be under the influence of that which is contrary to God. And then he goes on to state something that is absolutely necessary to sober-mindedness. He says, according as God hath dealt to every man the measure of faith. So we see here that sober thinking, which is necessary to fulfilling the duty and obligation of verses 1 and 2, this is in harmony with faith. The reason God's people do not obey what is stated in verses 1 and 2 is due to the fact that they don't think right. It takes proper thinking to give yourself to God. If you refuse to give yourself to God, you're not thinking right. And the reason that people do not think right, I'm talking about saved people, is because of a lack of faith. That's what he's talking about here. So our subject is our stature of faith. The truth is our spiritual stature. And think about that, your spiritual stature. What is your spiritual stature? But our spiritual stature goes hand in hand with our stature of faith. If you have little faith, you're of little spiritual stature. So it goes hand in hand. The two coincide. So again, briefly, let's look at this reasonable service of God's people. It is a service that involves total dedication. Total dedication. Again, verse 1, you see that we are to present our bodies a living sacrifice unto God. It is a personal responsibility as seen in the ye and the your. What is stated here is not just the duty and the obligation of a few, but it is the duty and obligation of every one of us, every child of God. This is their duty. This is their obligation. And the duty and obligation that is stated is done for God. You don't do it for anyone else. You do it for God. Notice again the phrase, unto God. That's why you do it, God. Which of course tells us it's not about pleasing ourselves. It's about pleasing God. God. It is a duty that involves losing sight of ourselves and being completely absorbed with God. The duty and obligation stated involves a spirit of readiness. We should always be ready to present ourselves unto God. It is a state of cheerfulness. We should cheerfully do so. And it is voluntary. It's not something anyone can force you to do. We can have all kinds of rules, all kinds of written laws. Every church member must do this, this, this. No one can force you to do this. No one can. You can force your children, or you can force church members to be in line with certain things. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. But you can't force anyone to do this. And let me say, all the other things that you might force someone to do doesn't mean a thing unless they do this. Doesn't mean a thing. So it is a complete and entire resignation of our lives. That's what is required, a living sacrifice, a sacrifice in life. We're to be ready to do so. We're to cheerfully do so. We're to voluntarily. We ought to want to do so. And it's holy, and it's acceptable unto God. And our entire lives are to be set aside for God's glory and that which is pleasing to the Lord. We see in verse 2 that it is a service that involves a nonconformity to the world. Be not conformed to the world. Do not be fashioned in accordance with the world. That is, we're to resist the world. We are to live above the world's philosophies and the world's reasonings, to live above the world. The world is earthly minded. We're not to be conformed to earthly mindedness. Everything the world does is based upon earth, based upon that which is earthly, based upon the temporal. We're not to be conformed to the world's ways. We must not allow ourselves to be cast into the mold of the world. The world tries very hard to cast everyone into its mold. We're not to be cast into the mold of the world. We're not to be influenced by the world's way of thinking. That's not what is to control our lives. We see it is also a service that involves an inner transformation. Verse 2 also, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind. The child of God is to have different views and different feelings, different reasonings, different attitudes than that of the world. It is a service that is continual. Again in verse 2, everything is present tense in verse 2. The word be is twice used, once in the negative, be not conformed to the world. That is, again and again, not fashioned and influenced by the world. And then it's used in the positive, be ye transformed. That is, again and again, anew, every day. That's our duty. That's our obligation. We are to continually live upon the altar. Present your bodies a living sacrifice. That's where we're to live. We are to live upon the altar unto God. And that brings us to that which is necessary to this reasonable service. Paul states, we've already mentioned it, that right thinking is vitally necessary to this service. Again, verse 3, but, that is, rather than proud and self-centered thoughts, we're to think soberly. That is, we're to think clearly. Our thinking is not to be clouded. It is the result of living under the influence of the grace of God. We read in Titus 2, 12 and 13 that the grace of God that bringeth salvation teaches us to live soberly. That is, it teaches us to think clearly and not to have our thought process clouded with a bunch of nonsense. A child of God who is sober will think right. And the child of God who is sober will perform their duty and obligation to God. If we resist our duty and obligation to God, we're not thinking right. We're not sober. We're like a drunk. The reason that people fail to do what is stated in verses 1 and 2, talking about saved people, is because they're drunk. They are intoxicated with the world. They are intoxicated with self. And they're unable to perform the duty. They do not think clearly. Their mind is clouded. And their lives are unreasonable. It doesn't align with the mercies of God. So sober thinking is absolutely necessary to fulfilling the duty and obligation that is stated. Right thinking will cause one to see the absolute necessity of verses 1 and 2. If you're thinking right, verses 1 and 2 make perfect sense. Yeah, I ought to do that. Right thinking is will fill one with a longing to live in verses 1 and 2, to give you a thirst and a passion to be in verses 1 and 2. And again, if that's not your longing, you're not thinking right. If that's not your passion, you're not thinking right. You're like a drunk, someone under the influence. Any kind of thinking that leads you away from verses 1 and 2 is wrong thinking. Any kind of thinking that would lessen the importance of what is written in verses 1 and 2 is wrong thinking. It's not only wrong, it's delusional. It doesn't make sense. It's beyond reason. We see the root of wrong or right thinking. to think soberly, and then notice what it says, according. We're in verse 3. To think soberly according. According. In accord with. In harmony. As God hath dealt to every man the measure, the quantity, the degree, and the size of faith. So right thinking and faith go hand in hand. And these are necessary if we're going to fulfill the duties of verses 1 and 2. A lack of faith produces wrong thinking, and in turn results in a failure to fulfill the duty of verses 1 and 2. All of us here have different degrees of stature, different degrees of wealth, different degrees of intellectual gifts, different degrees of talent and skill. But the most important stature is your spiritual stature. And your spiritual stature is in proportion with the stature of your faith. According as God hath dealt to every man the measure of faith. All through the Word of God, we as God's children are exhorted to walk and to live by faith. That's how we're to live. The just shall live by faith. We walk by faith and not by sight, Paul said. So what is faith? Well, contrary to what many think, it's not blindness, it's not ignorance to your circumstances or your surroundings or your needs. It is not foolishness. It's not something that's based upon dreams. It has to have a foundation, and the foundation is, thus saith the Lord. It's never contrary to who God is. It's never contrary to what God has said. Faith means that you are persuaded. That you are persuaded. The sad truth is that many of God's people are more persuaded in the world's ways than God's ways. They walk by sight. But faith is to be persuaded. Faith is to have confidence in God. That's where we put our confidence, in God. Not in circumstances. Not in the economy. Not in the bank account. But our confidence is to be in God. What you put confidence in, you depend upon. Faith is dependence. Faith is reliance upon God. Faith is unreserved trust in the Lord. Being persuaded by God, being persuaded of God, having confidence in God, faith causes you to lean upon God. Faith causes you to rest upon the Lord. Faith will lead you to cleave to God. Faith will lead you to look to God. Faith will cause you to come to God, casting yourself upon Him. Faith is living in the reality of who God is. That's faith. And our thinking is in accord with our faith. Faith means that we let go. Faith means that we see God. It's embracing the things of God rather than the things of the world. Faith is believing. But it's more than that. It's acting upon what you believe. It's not just believing. People say they believe a lot of things and they live contrary to what they say they believe. Faith is also acting upon what is believed. It is believing and acting upon the omnipotence of God. There isn't anyone here that would deny the omnipotence of God, that God is almighty. Faith is acting upon that. It is acting upon the omnipotence of God. In other words, it's living like we believe that God is almighty. It is believing and acting upon the omniscience of God. Everyone here believes in the wisdom of God, the all-knowing ability of God. Faith is living like we believe that. Faith acts upon the omnipresence of God, the sovereignty of God. It's living and acting upon what we believe concerning God, the love of God, the truthfulness of God, the return of Christ. It's acting upon all of these things. Job said in Job 13 and 15, though he slay me, yet will I trust him. Now in the context, Job is saying, even though all of this is happening to me, and we all know what happened to Job, and even if God casts me away, I'm still going to trust Him. Even if God casts me away, I'm still going to trust Him, is what Job says. So he's saying, regardless of any setback in my life, we all have setbacks. We all have disappointments. He says, regardless, I'm going to trust God. That's faith. He's saying, no matter what happens, I am going to have confidence in God. I am going to have dependence upon God. I'm going to rely upon Him. I'm going to continue to lean upon Him and to rest upon Him and look to Him. I'm going to continue to come to Him and cast myself upon Him. I'm going to keep believing what God says, regardless of what happens. That was Job's testimony. And that's faith. That's faith. Faith is not dependent upon circumstances. We need faith. This faith is vitally essential to living the Christian life. I don't believe you can live the Christian life without it. Living for the Lord is in direct proportion to our measure of faith, to how much faith we have. Our degree of dedication to God depends upon our measure of faith. Our degree of nonconformity to the world depends upon our measure of faith. Our degree of transforming depends upon our measure of faith. The quality of our spiritual life depends upon our measure of faith. Our degree of living for the Lord depends upon our measure of faith. Our degree of serving the Lord depends upon our measure of faith. Faith will keep you going. Faith will cause you to press on. You need faith. Our obedience to the Lord depends upon our measure of faith. It's not always easy to obey God. Obeying God may cost you a lot of things in this life. You're going to need faith to obey the Lord. Our following of the Lord depends upon our measure of faith. Most people don't have problems following God as long as He's going where they want to go. But the Lord doesn't always go where you and I want to go. And our following of the Lord depends upon our measure of faith. Our prayer life is dependent upon our measure of faith. Our love for God is dependent upon our measure of faith, because the greater your faith, the greater your love for God. Our enjoyment of God depends upon our measure of faith. Most of God's people do not truly enjoy God. You've got to have faith to enjoy the Lord. Our peace, our assurance, depends upon our measure of faith. Our endurance in the things of God depends upon our measure of faith. Hebrews 11, verse 6, "For without faith it is impossible to please Him." Without faith, the Christian life is a nonentity. It doesn't exist. You cannot please God without faith. This is why Christ charged His apostles. In Mark 11, 22, He said, "Have faith in God." That's directly from Christ. Have faith in God. That's the secret. That's the secret for living a fruitful and productive life for the Lord. Faith. The reason that people depart from the Lord. I mean, you can give a lot of reasons. They fall into sin. We're aware of all of that. But it's also directly connected to a lack of faith. People depart from the Lord and backslide and waver. The reason is a lack of faith. When you break it all down, it gets back to a lack of faith. We read in Hebrews 3, verse 12, "Take heed, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God." Unbelief will cause you to depart from God. Faith will never cause you to depart from God. Faith doesn't leave God. Faith draws closer to God. Unbelief departs from God. And once you begin that departure, it's hard to say what sin you might commit. But the departure begins through unbelief. All through Hebrews 11, we read of those who had faith in God. And they bear witness of the productiveness of faith. The ones who accomplished the most in the Word of God are the men and women who had faith. The ones who were able to endure the most were men and women who had faith. The ones who went the furthest spiritually were men and women who had faith. The ones who ascended to the highest spiritual heights were men and women of faith. Faith is vitally essential. We have to have it. And one is not going to turn their life over to God unless you have faith in God. It takes faith to just give your life to somebody. People give their lives to the world because they have faith in the world. They trust the world. Sadly, that's true of many of God's people. But we're to turn our lives over to God. That requires faith. If you're struggling with turning your life over to God, you need to pray for more faith. Because the truth is, you don't trust Him enough. You don't trust Him enough to give your life to Him. So you need more faith. Our quality of spiritual life is in proportion to faith. Notice what Jesus said to the centurion. Matthew chapter 8, verse 13. He says, "As." A comparison is being made. "As thou hast believed," that's faith, "so be it done unto thee." You see that? there is a direct correlation. There is a direct correlation between our quality of spiritual life and faith. As and so, as you have believed, so shall it be done unto thee. So our measure of faith should be of great concern to us. It's something that ought to greatly concern us. Because everything in the Christian life is connected to it. Now there are various measures of faith. I mean, our text suggests that. And much is dependent upon our measure of faith. Therefore, we need to pray with the apostles, Lord, increase our faith. Lord, increase our faith. He can do it. You try it sometime. Just try to increase your faith. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. The Lord's the giver of faith. So we have to go to Him and say, Lord, increase our faith. Oh, that our measure of faith would be that which transcends and surpasses and goes beyond and outlasts and is bigger and larger than all the obstacles. There will be obstacles. Are you going to be stopped by every obstacle? Are you going to turn aside at every obstacle? Are you going to throw up your hands and give up at every obstacle? Or do you have faith to press on? Faith has to be bigger than the obstacle, and there are some mighty big obstacles. Faith has to be bigger than all the difficulties and all the inconvenience. It's not always convenient to serve God. Faith must be bigger than all the inconveniences and all the circumstances. All the trials and all the so-called impossibilities. There are a lot of things that come into our lives and we say, well, that's not possible. Luke 1:37, with God all things are possible. Requires faith. We read of various degrees of faith. We read of little faith. In the Gospels, the Lord condemned little faith every single time. He never, never commended little faith. He always rebuked it, little faith. And the Bible speaks of great faith in the Gospels, which the Lord always commends, great faith. It is great faith that enables you to pass through the fiercest winds and get through the obstacles. It's great faith that enables you to ascend to spiritual heights. It's great faith that enables you to do the extraordinary. It's great faith that enables you to cross the Red Sea. Now, I believe, you don't have to agree, but I believe when they crossed the Red Sea, I don't believe they stood there and everything just, the waters just parted. I believe they put one foot in and the waters just gradually parted as they took their steps. That's faith. That's what faith does. Faith will enable you to march victoriously around Jericho. March around the city seven times. That makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. And your last time around, shout, and the walls will fall. That doesn't make sense. It takes faith to march around Jericho. It takes faith to walk with God. Because we can't always see God. Takes faith to walk with God in the midst of mockers and despisers. in the midst of the ungodly and the vile and the wicked, in the midst of evil and compromise, takes faith to walk with God. Oh, that our measure of faith would be that which enables us to go to the brook Cherith when God says, I have commanded the ravens to feed thee there. That doesn't make sense. Ravens are scavengers. You mean to tell me they're going to bring me food? It doesn't make sense. But faith, Elijah had the faith to go down to the brook Cherith. And what happened? The ravens fed him there. Oh, that our measure of faith would be that which goes to Zarephath when God says, I have commanded a widow woman there to sustain thee. We need faith. It's this faith that will enable us to stand before giants. It's enabled David to go against Goliath. It enables us to walk in the fires praising God, as the three Hebrews. And that stands true without compromise. Takes faith to stand. Takes faith to stand when your friends are leaving and those that you depend upon are leaving. Takes faith to continue to stand. Takes faith when your circumstances are growing worse and worse. Takes faith to wait upon the Lord. And almost every time when God says, wait upon me, things are going to get worse before they get better. So it takes faith to wait upon God. It takes faith to step out of the boat when the Lord says, it is I, be not afraid, come. That takes faith. Oh, that our measure of faith be that which does what God says. When men say, you can't do that, it takes faith. There will always be somebody to tell you, you can't do that. That won't work. Trust God. Our measure of faith needs to be that which Paul had, that could stand in the midst of the storm and said, and he said, I believe God. I believe God that it shall be even as it was told me. We need some people who are able to stand and just say, I believe God. It doesn't have to make sense. And people don't have to agree with it. I believe God. Someone come along and say, well, you want my opinion? No, not really. But you're probably going to give it anyway. I believe God. I believe God. It causes us to believe against temporal hope being taken away. When all hope is taken away, faith can still believe. So we see here that right thinking leads to obeying, verses 1 and 2. And right thinking is connected of faith. So I remind you that living for the Lord, our dedication and our surrender to the Lord, our quality of spiritual life is in direct proportion to our measure of faith. Lord, increase our faith. Increase our faith. The more faith, the more endurance in the things of God. The more faith, the more courage to move forward in the things of God. The more faith, the more steadfastness in the things of the Lord. The more faith, the more prayer. The more faith, the more zeal in the things of the Lord. The more faith, the more victory. The more faith, the more we overcome. The more faith, the more joy. The more faith, the more praise. Lord, increase our faith. What is our measure of faith? Measure your faith. Measure your faith by who God is. And oh, it's so small. It's so small. Measure your faith by, use the measuring stick of the men and women mentioned in Hebrews 11. And our faith is so small. Lord, increase our faith. We need that. There isn't anyone here that doesn't need more faith. All of us need more faith. So what is our measure of faith? What is our stature of faith? How significant is faith in our life? What role does faith play in our life? God removes everything. That's a test of faith. God tells you to do something that doesn't make sense. That's a test of faith. God tells you to do something that seems impossible. That's a test of faith. God doesn't test our faith for His own information. He tests our faith to reveal to us, so that we can pray, Lord, increase my faith. Lord, I believe, help thou my unbelief. Oh, how true that is. Because none of us are perfect and none of us have reached the stature we need to be at, there's always unbelief. Even in our belief, there's unbelief somewhere. Lord, help my unbelief. So, we need faith. It's true of all of us. God doesn't call all of us to do the exact same things. He does call us to do something. He calls us, every one of us, to give our life to Him. And that's the foundation of the life that God's called you to live. And it requires faith. It requires faith. I've had people tell me that it'd be a fool to just lay down my life to God. God's given me a brain. Yeah, why don't you use it and give your life to God? Because right thinking, that's what right thinking does. All these people who say, well, God's given me a brain. All that is an excuse. They're trying to justify their unbelief. Yes, God's given us a brain and we're to use it. And if we think right, we will lay down our lives. We'll just say, Lord, here it is. Take it. Here's my life. I'm giving it to you. That requires faith. So again, that each one of us might pray, Lord, increase our faith. As we come to the end of our days on this earth, and the times in which we live, we're going to need faith. You're not going to make it without it. You're not going to make it without faith. You need faith. It's true of all of us. Brother Tim, if you'd come and lead us in verse 7.